Well, today's April 11th, and we're taping for Yulis, regarding Rus. And one can obviously see that while the Chazal tell you there are a few different purposes to the book, it's obvious that the main purpose is that David needs to be given some background. We discussed that many times, no need to review. And if you want to say, like the Medrash and Rus Rabba, that the purpose of the book is to teach the power of Chesed, okay? The power of Chesed, what Rus did, made her to be what we call Ima Shel Malchus. So, when Chazal tell us that the connection to Rus, to David, is David Sheriva Es Hashem Beshiros Beshishbachos. That her name is a hint to what David would one day do in writing Tehillim. So the ultimate purpose of Megillas Rus is not just Malchus based David, but that David would write a book Tehillim in order to teach everybody how to reach out to God when they run out of words. This is just like Rus drew close to God from the depths. So too can Tehillim help us do that. Okay, with me on that? Mm-hmm. So one cannot help but see in Sefer Tehillim that there are many different types of Tehillim. I can just divide Tehillim into two totally different types of prokim. One that relates to God as the master of nature, and one that relates to God as the master of the events that take place in the world. The main one that Tehillim concentrates on is Yetzias Mitzrayim. The whole prokim in Tehillim dedicated to reviewing the events of Yetzias Mitzrayim. 10 plagues, the time in the desert, the aftermath, chapter 78, 105, 106, 114, Yetzias Yisrael Mitzrayim, Beis Yaakov Mi'Avloezi, and some other program in between that describe our the events of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And everything else is like events in Shemayim, Mamayim, Hashemayim, Allah Shemayim, how wondrous are God's workings? Those are the nature prokim. Creation of the world. And then, Yetzias Mitzrayim is not by any means the only historical event described in Sefer Tehillim. There are a whole host, 25 or more prokim in Tehillim that relate directly to events in David's life. Either because you have to look, search for them, and find them, or because he says so at the heading. The David B'Shalom Sovas Tamal B'Fnei Avi Melech Yosheva Ve'Yelach describes the story in Shmuel Av. Right? And so those are obvious. And in those prokim, I would like, and all of them actually, I would like to divide the prokim into 5 stages of David's life. One is the early times of his life, when he was raised until he was crowned king. At what age he was crowned king is a huge dispute in the commentaries, and Chazal say he was 28 when he was crowned king. It's somewhat hard to fathom, because when he's described, right, when he kills Goliath, which was after he's crowned king, he's a little kid. He's a lad. 28 doesn't get described the way you see there.
You can't work back from how when he died, how long his reign was?
Well, that's how you do. He was 70 when he died. He ruled 40 years. The question is, how long did Shaul rule? The Seder Olam says Shaul ruled only 2 years, based on a very cryptic pasuk in Perek Yimel, the beginning of Perek Yimel. On that pasuk, everybody, the Radak, the Brahmanel, everybody looks in to try to figure out the history from Yahushua to the building of the Beis HaMikdash, because there is a pasuk that says that Shlomo built the Beis HaMikdash 480 years after we left Egypt, 440 years after we entered the land, which is extremely problematic because Sefer Shoftim alone seems to traverse over 500 years. Mm-hmm. If you count up all the years of the Shoftim and the years in between. And that doesn't even account for any years in between the Shoftim. The time that the Shofet dies until they sin the next day and require a new salvation. Right? Some of them it says, Vatishko to Aretz Shmonim Shanah, so you've got to count that. until you get to the next shofar. So all these problems are dealt with in the Seder, all of them, no doubt, that's a Tanaic work. And some Mephoshim Shonim. Avravanel, for instance, and I'm preferring him, says that Shaul ruled something like 20 years, not just 2 years. And you have to reinterpret that very cryptic pasuk, compared to Yom Ben Shana Shaul Melcho Shnatayim Yomim Malach Al Yisrael. The way Avravanel reads it is that when Shaul was ruling for 2 years, this story took place. Instead of the Seder Olam that says that Shaul ruled altogether 2 years. I mean, if Shaul ruled 2 years, then David is 28 when he goes to life. If Shaul ruled 20, 25 years, then David's 15, 16, 17, 18, teenager when he kills Goliath. Which fits the story of it. Anyway, so it's the first stage is David when he's born until he is crowned king. I'll tell you, I'm going to go back to describing stage. The second stage is from the time he's crowned king until Shaul starts to despise him. Does that take a week? Does that take 7 years? It doesn't say in the text. Obviously, going to say Roland is less than 2 years, right? But David has a meteoric rise after killing Goliath. And he can see, he had already been crowned king by that time. So he sees, you know, like just like Moshe has to be raised in the palace so he can know how to talk to kings. So too, he saw, I'm marrying the king's daughter, I have to see, Tachsise Malchus. You know. Right? Apparently, Michal didn't think he learned it so well when he was dancing feverishly in front of Yarov, you know what I'm talking about, in Shmuel Bet, Haftorah, from Rosh Hashmini that we didn't read this year. But she knew better how a king should act than David did. David admitted, you know, that's okay. Your father wouldn't act like this. You're right. He'd always take a feasibility study of whether it's okay to dance before the Aron, and that's why he's not king anymore. He took the same feasibility study of whether we can get away with not listening about a mullet. Right? You know, we're not waiting for the people, not waiting for Shmuel back in that same prayer tribunal. Be that as it may, David, until he came in bed. Instead, with Shaul, lived a glorious, really an idyllic existence compared to what he had in the first stage. Right? I'll get back to define each stage. The third stage is perhaps the most harrowing of the stages, is the time he spent escaping Shaul time after time. Remember, you know your Shmuel pretty well? Right, she has to help him out the window, and Yonatan has to help him at the Rosh Chodesh party, the Machor Chodesh of Torah, right? Sound familiar? So that's very harrowing for David. And you see the problem, that's really, that third stage make up most of the prokim in Sefer Tehillim that are named after events in David's life in heaven. Mostly concentrated between chapter 50 and 60. If you know your tale, right? So in chapter 50 and 60. I think there are others. The David B'Shan Sos, the Mephnei of the Melech Medushay, was chapter 34, right? But most of them are between chapter 50 and 60. Okay? So that's stage 3. Stage 4 is after Shaul dies, right? He did not become king of all of Israel immediately, but everyone knew that was going to happen. They said so in chapter 5 when they did crown him over all of Israel. They said, we knew you would one day be king even when Shaul was king, certainly when his son Ish-bosheth was king for 2 years. Right?
No.
You know, David could be forgiven for saying, so why did you go along with, no, that's what people do. Right? So that's stage 4. That's another very idyllic time for David. He's a king over a vast, he wins every battle. He is the meteoric rise even goes to a greater extent until, see, he doesn't lose a single battle. He wins at everything he does. He is totally successful. He wins every battle until he arranges to lose one. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Right? He arranges to get to it.
Bathsheba, yeah. He makes an arrangement. Not just, he wasn't killed alone, you know. Uriah was killed with 50 other men. That's just Okay, that's four. Well, that's now five. Five is after that. The procrimatillum of David really, really questions. Do I deserve to live? Am I not bet some of them read till Shocha? Say, Chor for it, give me Shocha. Lord, they see me out of the world, look at the demon. Right? Because he's really worried that his legacy will be lost and that possibly he won't even get the promise of his son building the base of English. Maybe another son of Yishai will now take over the kingdom. Right? Yishai says, maybe, you know, when the prophet said one of Yishai's sons will be the king, maybe I'm going to lose that. Maybe it'll be one of my brothers, maybe one of his descendants who will build this temple. Right? But because he did such a marvelous tshuva and wrote this beautiful prokim of desperation, Mamish, that Hashem says, not only will your son build the base of Mikdash, as I promised, your son with her will, because I've forgiven both of you. I mean, that's the question of whether she went willingly to David or not. Was she rendered forbidden to David? Where's the tshuva? If she's forbidden to David, how can he maintain the marriage to her? All subsequent children, like Chas v'Shomer, like Molzerin. The Gemara in Ksuvos Daf Tes gives two answers to that question. One is not usually quoted, it shouldn't be quoted, because it's an answer, though, is that if she went unwillingly, then since she wasn't rendered also to Uriah, then after Uriah's death, she wasn't rendered also to David. The big Mishnah Melech and the Chosel to that goes through this whole union. It's a package deal. When a woman goes willingly to commit adultery, she's forbidden to that man forever. She may not care about halacha, she's forbidden to that man, but she's also forbidden to her husband. He can't stay with her, even if he wants to. Right? So Uriah died, so okay, she's no longer married to Uriah, but how can she go back to David? How can she go to David? Again? So the Gemara gives a second answer. Whoever goes out to battle with David, the Gemara learns it from a war with Shaul, but Mestama David kept doing it also, that they gave tokens to their wives just in case they would be taken captive or lost and no knowledge of them, and there would be Chas v'Shalom and Aguna, right? So they would give their wives a divorce. If I don't return for the reasonable time after the battle is over, you are now divorced from Achshav. So it's a living man giving you a get. Ain't get lacharisa, so it's a living man giving you a get. Get it? Rebbeinu Tam in the Tosfos of all places in Bar Metzia that says that he doesn't like this paper because this explanation of what the men did. Because if that's the case, then what David did in the battle, when he sent Uriah back home to spend time with his wife, was the worst thing he should be doing. Because then you will retroactively make your actions adulterous. And you see why? Because he went back to be with his wife, and there's a new date on the get. Why does Rashi say that why he sent him back? So that when she gives birth, he already knows she's pregnant, she told him. When she gives birth, 8 months later, 8.5 months later, and Uriah is saying, how did you have a baby? I've been in battle for 2 years. Oh, I remember I came home. It's, oh my God. You get it? Mm-hmm. But the plan didn't work. Why? Because he refused to go home. And he said, my men are in battle. And I should be with comfort, have comfort with my wife. You get it? So that didn't work. David had said, okay, you know, abortion is obviously not an option. They did have kol shel ekrim to abort babies, obviously not an option. And so they decide to, David has to have quickly killed, and then quickly have to take the wife. So that people will think it's my child, my 8 month, 7 month child. Isn't it? The child died after 7 days. And so after this, a lot of prokim and tehillim that look like the desperation, total desperation, is either stage 3 or stage 5. When Shaul was chasing after him, or after Bathsheba. But Kadosh Baruch Hu is gracious, he accepts David's children. He tells him, your wife, your child with her, will be a man of peace. In named Shlomo. You can understand maybe why another son of David named Avshalom decides to rebel. He says, wait, that man of peace is me. Of course, he lost that designation by his rebellion. Okay. So you see these five stages of David's life can explain five very different types of Prokem and Tehillim that relate to each stage. Even the Prokem about Yetzias Mitzrayim. Okay. Even the nature of Prokem. David is, perhaps in his youth, he's very idyllic. He's writing poetry and song even in his youth. At the age of 14, 15, 16, he's taken to play harp for the king. Then we find out that he's an amazing warrior as well, even as a youth. How he scared away and had killed a bear and a lion. Wow. How he convinced the king that I can take care of this giant. Amazing combination of love and war, you know. And music and warrior. And poetry. So there are five stages in Tehillim. Five stages. I didn't go through those as clearly, but five stages of David's life, right? And my time is that there are five stages in verse first. Her youth, we don't know much about that. Her life with Mahlon after he married her, until he dies. Her life with Naomi after he convinces her to go back with her. And four is her life in Israel with Naomi, gleaning in the fields before she meets Boaz, and then her life after she meets Boaz. Very conveniently, five different stages that David became aware of. He looked, Shmuel told him about his great grandmother and why there's some opposition to you. That he probably knew. Right? The thing with David is that there was opposition to him even by his own brothers.
He's the youngest, right?
They didn't like him. He's the youngest, but it was Pesukim in Tehillim, like, B'nei imini harubi, my mother's children despised me, cast me aside. Evan ma'asu abonim, my son of Rosh Pinah, maybe a more famous person. The stone that was rejected by the builders became the foundation stone. Evan bonim ben, the builders are the sons. I was rejected, but God brought me in. Very nice. Why was he rejected? So I'll just share with you, and then we'll get back into this, is that there is an agadah that says that Mr. and Mrs. Yishai fell out of love. But they made an arrangement where Mrs. Yishai would remain in the house, look after the kids, and the two of them, they didn't hate each other, they just didn't love each other, they just lived together under the same roof. And he told her, if you want out of this arrangement, just tell me, and that day I'll give you a gift, and here you go, to be the wife of another man or whatever else you want. It's not you, they're married. Okay. If he wants to continue the marriage and she agrees, then they'll be married again. So then we don't have to do another wedding. We're still married. Okay. Remember, she can't be the wife of another man unless she gets a get. But he, according to the rules at that time, it was before a gerushim, he marries another woman. And unlike what happens with most tsaros, co-wives don't get along. These two are okay because, the Mrs. Yishai, the elder, knows that her place is not really, she doesn't like him too much either, right? So the two women become friends. And after a couple of years of this arrangement, Mrs. Yishai the first, the elder, confesses that she misses her husband. So Mrs. Yishai the second says, listen, you're his wife as much as I am. We're about the same size. Tonight is Rosh Chodesh. You'll be in the room. I'll tell you what you should tell him so he thinks it's me. We went on a walk today and we were talking about this. So whisper that in his ear and he'll think it's me. Right? So that happens, as you can imagine. This is after they already had seven sons and one daughter, the elder Mrs. Yishai. She becomes pregnant from this. And Mr. Yishai considers her an adulteress. We're still married. How did you become pregnant? And she tells him, with you? your father, this job, this, we talked about, I haven't touched you in 5 years. And she says, no, no, you don't remember that? He goes, I don't remember that night. I don't remember ever being alone with you in a room in years. So she continues to try to convince him. Right? And she even gets the other woman to convince him. Right? He didn't believe it. You're just covering for her. Right? So this child was dubbing. So that means Shaul was the end. Shmuel said, come and bring you, one of your sons is going to be the next king. It's like a Cinderella story. Cinderella is based on this. Right? One of your sons is king. He didn't even call him David. Right? David didn't get shot. Because he said, you told me to bring in my son. He says, not my son. Okay? Mm-hmm. So when he crowned him king, then he said, she was telling the truth. So you see that the two stories have these inyanim. So let's the early life of Rus, however, according to Chazal, had some of the idealism that we find in David. It's that she's the daughter or granddaughter of the king of Moab. You often wonder why Chazal did that. Why do Chazal say that Hagar was Paro's daughter? Did you hear that? Rashi said, Rashi brings a medrash, Rashi brings it down. Timna was the daughter of a king. Well, maybe we miss all this. It's drash. I don't say it's not Taurus Moshe, but it's drash. You know, Rishonim would say, you know, if you wanted to take up all of it, right? It doesn't defy logic that she could be the king's daughter.
I always wonder, like, why would he put that into his own commentary?
Well, Rashi wants to make the point that the king of Egypt has a daughter who says, you know, I see some basic morality and theological underpinning that I see in this man and his entourage. I would prefer to be like a handmaid in his group than to remain where I am. Maybe that journey started when she was very young. She didn't like what was going on. She didn't like the mistreatment of people and visitors. And she, you know, some tinge of morality in her. I think that there's an eminently obvious connection in the story of the Torah, where precisely that does happen, where our salvation comes from the very house of the king who is tormenting us and killing us and destroying us. You know what I'm talking about? Paro's daughter. Without Paro's daughter, there's no story here. The boy drowns in the water. Okay. So don't be surprised if from the very house of the evil will come your salvation. They say that the son, the founder of Hamas, is now on the So it can happen. Right? Sometimes we say we're our own worst enemies, but sometimes from within the camp of our own worst enemies comes, you know, some good stuff. Right? Okay, so what happens in Perek Beis with the favoritism of Rus, right? I think I've always been very prepared based. I think you have to know Yerushalmi Peah. You should know Yerushalmi. It's a huge mesecta. Yerushalmi Peah is so amazing about the laws of leaning, the laws of leaning according to the field, the laws of Sheikh Chapeh, like you know, things like that, and Tzedakah. Why doesn't Boaz just give a handout to his cousin's wife, widow? What does he have to glean in the field? Come on, as soon as he knew that she was gleaning, why didn't you say, you came out, I heard that story, you're such a tzaddik. Here's $10,000 here, you're set. You buy back your field. Why doesn't he do that? The answer is, it's a shanda. No one wants handouts. Like a chick compay is not a handout. Like a chick compay is a xeris hamelech to redistribute some of the wealth. Okay. Becomes the property of the. You say, what does your father do for them? Oh, my father's a gleaner. Oh, nice. Okay, good. So he feeds the whole family. He's not a beggar. He's not announcing his hunger on a train or something for money he gets for liquor. He is. It's a worthwhile occupation. Right? Chazal, I think the end of the last class with that is that his discussion with her about don't go to other fields. I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to make sure that the boys don't bother you. You stay here with my gleaners, and you'll be fine. What's interesting is that he tells her to glean with the girls. But then when Naomi says, "Where did you get so much food?" He said, "I gleaned with the na'arim." Be careful of us. I know your mother-in-law might have said that, no one's going to want to marry you, but there are plenty of people who might want to practice on you. Who want to, take advantage of a new girl. Be careful. Right. So he tells her, I'll look after you, the na'arim won't bother you. Chazal, don't, that's creepy. So Chazal say the na'arim are members of the Sanhedrin who might want to stick to the guns of saying, no more of like, may join our Kehillah. I'm going to take care of you from now. I'm going to prove that the women of Moab are different, and you're the best example of the chesed, of who should be allowed, because, and that they were excluded because they didn't do a masa chesed. Right? Mm-hmm. So that's how I'm going to get you in. So that's how chapter 2 ends. And his promise that she comes back to show Naomi how much she got that day. So Naomi decides in chapter 3, I'm going to take care of this girl. I'm going to make sure she has someone to look after her. So it's not just companionship. Ruth can probably find companionship based on the way Boaz talks to her in chapter 3 and based on the simple shot of chapter 2. She would have found people to want her. But what kind of life would that have been for such an anxious child? Naomi says, I'm going to have her hit the jackpot. She'll be covered for the rest of her life. And that's going to be chapter 3. We have class on Tuesday, I believe, right? Just Tuesday. So we're going to start with chapter 3 on Tuesday, right? Now.